Welcome back to the Lyme Podcast. My name is Aaron Alexander, and this is a place that we bring together the world's leading experts in all things health and wellness to help you optimize your mind, body, and movement. Today's conversation is all about some of the crap that exists in our food system. The guest is Food Babe, Vani Harari. She is a New York Times bestselling author. She is an activist. She has made reforms with some of the biggest corporations out there. And it's really impressive to see someone be able to take a stand and actually be able to create change as opposed to just kind of throwing her hands up like I think it's so easy to do. And in this conversation, we break down some of the sneaky things that are snuck into our various different foods at the grocery store or in restaurants and places of the like. And so it is a really important conversation, breaking down the things that any person, any judicious person with discernment of what they put in their body ought to know, ought to understand. I think it's a very shareable episode. It'd be a great one for your friends or family or anyone like to have in their back pocket, because this stuff is important. Thank you so much for subscribing to this so you get each week's episode. Thank you for leaving us reviews wherever you're listening to this. I read all of them and I appreciate them, and it's a helpful way to support this podcast. All right, let's get to it with my gal, Vani Harari, i.e. the Food Babe. I so greatly value what you have done and what you're doing and the path that you lead in the world. You're such an invaluable person and representation for all of us. It's like we live in very slippery times when it comes from a nutritional perspective and what we're picking up from the grocery stores and the people that we trust and the information that we get from all the different directions and which dogmas are correct, which dogmas are lies. It's confusing to eat in this year of 2023 / this whole century, it seems. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I believe food is actually, and eating isn't confusing. I think what's made it confusing is the food industry, who has invented these chemicals within the last 50 years that have inundated our food supply.
Yeah.
And the marketing that they have created to confuse us so that we believe them and we eat what they're telling us to eat instead of really intuitively understanding what our bodies are meant to be eating. So, like, I think nutrition is really simple when you stick to real food, right?
Yep.
You stick to real food that's unadulterated, that hasn't been touched by anyone, that you've maybe grown yourself or you've picked up from a farmer's market or the produce aisle of a grocery store. That food is like just beautiful in itself. Yeah. And when you start to chemically manipulate it, process it, break it down, create flavors that are the 1,000,000th best part of a taste that your brain could ever imagine, that's made in a laboratory and put into a packaged processed good that's supposed to sit on the shelves for, a year at a time. I think that's when things start to get confusing, because our brains are being hijacked by these chemicals. And our bodies don't know what to do with it. They're like, oh my gosh, this is so good. This is the best taste I've ever tasted. So of course I'm going to keep eating this food that's nutritionless, because it's not real food anymore. It's the cheapest of the cheap ingredients that you could mass produce and put it into a product. And so we're in this situation where we're being controlled by the food industry. We're not controlling our own lives and our own health. And for so much of my life, Aaron, I relinquished that control to fast food. And my parents, who were just immigrants coming here to America for the first time in the 1960s, knowing nothing about the American food system because they grew up in India, where, their parents and their households were making food from scratch every single day. And they were sharing like one cow with like a whole village. They were getting like a little bit of dairy, using it like a condiment, you know? And you know, having like the abundance of fruits and vegetables and all these medicinal spices all the time, and then coming to America and saying like, whoa, like what do Americans eat? Like they're not using like, you know, turmeric and ginger and like all this stuff in their cooking. They're like eating hamburgers and hot dogs and French fries. And, you know, my dad came here and he went to college and he went back to marry my mom, and it was an arranged marriage. And I remember he was, you know, they've told me the story where he had a lineup of like five or six women, and he met my mother first, and he knew that she was the one. And she was just away on the weekend with her parents. And she had no idea that she was going to get married that weekend, like within that week, and then get whisked away to the United States to live for the rest of her life. Like she didn't even go back to her house to like get her stuff and like clean up her room, nothing. She just got like married in this huge, ridiculous ceremony. And then back then you could pay passport officials to get a passport. And the first plane she ever took was to the United States. And the first thing my dad said to her was like, if we're going to live in America, we're going to eat like Americans. And here's a McDonald's sandwich. Mm. Like here's a hamburger.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like a form of virtue signaling in a way.
Yeah. And I mean, my mom knew quickly that like the American fast food lifestyle, like she didn't really like the taste of it. So she just started to cook her traditional recipes at home for herself and my dad. But because I wanted to fit in and I was one of the only Indian children like living in my town in North Carolina, I shunned all of it. And I saw my brother shunning it. So like he was 7 years older. So I was like, oh, it must not be good, that Indian food. And yeah. Now if people ask me today, like, what's my favorite restaurant in town? I'm like, my mom's house, like her homemade Indian food is like amazing. So yeah. Like, I'm like, what was I missing for all of my life? But you know, because it was so like fast food was so cheap and readily available, and my mom didn't know how to cook that. She just relied on that. And my dad thought it was just so great that it was available. And so like, I just had access to it. I just ate all of it like several times a week. I mean, I remember these stories of like my mom telling me that my dad put Coca-Cola in my brother's baby bottle because he wasn't gaining weight fast enough and it made the milk taste better. So he gave it, and so he would drink more of it.
Right.
Now I know why my brother is my, who he is today. But
it'd be some poor people stuff if he'd add like colostrum to it or something. That comes from a cow, whatever. We need something from a factory.
So it's crazy to think like how I was raised. But I mean, now I look back on it and I think about all my health issues. I had eczema, allergies. I was on like so many prescription drugs just to control my asthma and my eczema that it was insane. And like when my parents would take me to the doctor wouldn't say like, what are you feeding, you know, your daughter? Like, what is she eating? Like none of that. It was sure. Like, here's this cream, here's this shot, here's this prescription drug. This will help her get better. And that was that. And so, you know, I grew up on this, you trust a doctor and yep. You eat the fast food. And it wasn't until my early 20s that I just hit rock bottom and made a commitment. I was in the hospital getting my appendix out, and it took me forever to recover from that surgery. And it was that moment where I just decided like health was going to be my number one priority. I was going to treat my health like a debate round. In high school, I was a top tier debater, recruited to college to go to debate and was number one in the state and all of that. And back then you had to learn like the affirmative and negative of each side. And you had to go to the library and look up the microfiche to gather evidence. And there was like no Google. So like I learned to research my health at that point and just went to the library and would check out these giant books on nutrition. And there was this one phrase I remember in this book by Dr. Gabriel Cousins. And he said like the majority of food in the grocery store is dead.
Sure.
And I was like, well, that's how I felt most of my life, was dead. And I just was like, okay, I'm not going to eat dead food anymore. So that was the first thing I did, was like, I'm not going to eat dead food. I'm going to try to find the live food, like things that are growing from the ground.
What are examples of food-like substances that are dispersed throughout the supermarket that would be overt poisons, like carcinogenic. Like you would never eat that on its own. Like if you would actually have that, there'd be no value or no sustenance. It's simply a tool to preserve the product or increase the bottom line for a company. But actual nutritional value is just, it's not there for that. It's actually a means to support someone's financial bias. Are there some standout food-like substances on the market now that it would be wise for people to be aware of?
I mean, I think about Doritos. Like Doritos would be one example. I mean, you know, yeah, there's some corn in there, you know, but it's genetically engineered corn coming from seeds that are created in a laboratory to withstand heavy doses of Roundup that has the chemical glyphosate in it, which is implicated in cancers and court cases all over the United States right now. It's fact that it causes cancer. It's laced with artificial food dyes made with petroleum that are linked to hyperactivity in children, linked to autoimmune disorders, linked to brain inflammation, asthma, allergies, eczema. Then you have, it's also laced with MSG, which is an excitotoxin to the brain that's that really big chemical that actually hijacks your taste buds into making you eat more than you should. So you eat one chip and you want to finish the whole bag. So it's got so many different additives in it that, make the starting point of the GMO corn kind of negate itself. And then not to mention the oils. The oils are completely inflammatory. They're extracted with hexane, which is a carcinogenic compound solvent that the FDA doesn't even regulate the amount of hexane that remains in the product after it's made as into an oil. And then it's high in omega-6 fatty acids, which lead to all sorts of inflammation in our body. And so, I mean, Doritos is like one of the things that, like, I would say is like one of the worst things you could ever put in your body.
And is it specific? I'm looking for like umbrella ingredients across, because I feel like probably maybe a very low percentage of people listening to this podcast probably actually enjoy eating Doritos. And if they do, you know, more power to them. But specific ingredients that are across multiple products.
Yeah,
is there anything to look out for? Like you mentioned MSG, but is there any like low hanging fruit with that of just like, just exclude this and it will be incredibly beneficial for you and your family?
Yeah. So there's one ingredient that's made its way into even organic food that I think is so important. And it's an ingredient that you will find in almost 95% of processed foods. It's very hard not to find this ingredient unless it's like a one ingredient product like rice or brown rice or, you know, a dried mango or something like that. So it's called natural flavor. And natural flavor can literally mean 1,000 different chemicals behind that one specific label, because the FDA does not require food manufacturers to tell you the chemical compounds behind that flavor. And that flavor can include MSG, by the way, and other solvents that are genetically engineered, but also, so that also could be, you know, contaminated with Roundup, glyphosate. And so then also it's got that engineering component where they've taken the same scientists that made tobacco addictive, and they've taken that same science and they've applied it to food and created these chemicals. So we have a chemical addiction to the food. We remember the flavor. We remember the taste and the texture. We constantly crave it. Our mouths start to water when we think about a food. So like when I think of Chick-fil-A used to have like over 100 ingredients in their sandwich. They've started to reduce it because of my activism. And also I met with them and, you know, talked to them about their ingredients. But there's one ingredient that they like will not remove, and that's MSG, because it's like the thing that makes your mouth water when you think about that sandwich. And even though I haven't had it in like 15 years, my mouth still waters and I still remember the flavor. And that's why you also remember the difference in what a McDonald's hamburger tastes like versus a Wendy's hamburger versus a Burger King hamburger, the way it smells. Everything is engineered to like literally hijack your entire olfactory system.
There's something very gratifying about fast food burgers. I haven't had one for I don't know how long, but when I still have very fond memories of fast food burgers.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's that. Yeah. It's like it's engineered specifically to hit you in all the right spots.
Right.
It's fair. They did a great job. Science is powerful.
It is so powerful. But also, you know, this natural flavor that's being added to all of the products out there, it's there to it's there so that the food manufacturers can use less real food in their products, because real food tastes great, but also real food disintegrates, right, over time. Like, it gets bad, it goes rotten. And so, like, a friend of mine, Dr. Anna Maria Temple, she's an amazing pediatrician. She has a plate of Chick-fil-A. It's been sitting in her pantry for the last 6 weeks. It might be 8 weeks now. And she's like, Bonnie, there's no mold. The update, there's no mold. And I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, food should break down, right? You got to think about what happens when you eat this food and it doesn't break down in your system.
If it wasn't alive, it can't die.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. That's great. I'm going to reuse that. That's amazing. Yeah. Yes. That's amazing.
I think that's the thing. And if it's not alive, it ends up, you have to utilize, this gets into new age weeds that maybe you could fill in with some more scientific jargon, but, or language. But if something has a lower life force, you know, it's more dead, then you're going to have to extend your own life force in order to vivify that food-like substance and metabolize it and turn it into energy. But it ends up becoming, I don't know how it would work exactly, but that's just my like new age kind of jargony type perspective on it. But it feels like that, like there's certain food-like substances that you can put in your body, or I can put in my body. And it feels like I almost had to extend or expend energy in order to re-find homeostasis within myself to be able to utilize those calories, compared to something that has, you know, quite a high concentration of this life force thing, which maybe we can talk about. You might have more scientific language of what that means exactly, or you might just disagree with me as well. But it seems like there's kind of, it's like I'm this living, sentient, vibrating being, and then there's other energetic substances that I can place into this system. When that substance is higher vibrational or has more life force, it increases my life force. When it's lower, then I have to extend my life force in order to refine homeostasis. I could probably just cut that out of the podcast because I don't think that made any like scientific sense.
Well,
but that's kind of the way that I feel with eating.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even, and this is what's just so important is like to recognize you don't need to be a scientist or food scientist or rocket scientist to know how to eat.
Yeah.
It's very intuitive experience. Like I can tell you when I eat the microgreens out of my front porch every single day, I feel a level of energy I never thought was possible because they're so alive. I'm picking them from my garden. There's no interaction with anyone else. It's not going into a plastic bag. It's not sitting on a shelf for a week before I get to it. Like it's coming straight from the ground or an above ground planter in my case. And the energy that I feel doesn't need to be described scientifically. It's just intuitive in that I know that's so good for me. But when you do look at the science of microgreens, for example, you'll notice that like a microgreen of a broccoli or a microgreen of a kale sprout is, you know, 200 times more nutritious than the grown counterpart. And it's so cool when you do look at the science behind stuff and like, you know, prove that what I'm feeling is actually what I'm feeling. However, you can just feel it. And I just challenge everyone to like one day just decide not to eat any processed foods for like, you know, a while and see what happens.
Because give it a week.
I mean, I tell you, it is like night and day. I think they say it takes about around 21 days to really hone in on a new dietal change like that and to really receive the benefit and then start to reprogram your brain, especially if someone who's been eating a lot of processed foods.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
To go further down like the kind of new age, lacking any form of real substance weeds. The analogy that's coming to mind in relation to food is kind of like hanging around like a depressed person, you know, or an anxious person or someone that's just like they're in a mental emotional state that's kind of like lower vibration, quotations. You almost have to extend yourself, a part of yourself, to refine a balance within that relationship. And if you're with someone that's just continually depressed or continually having some type of like mental emotional issues, it starts to pull on you in a way, compared to placing yourself into an environment with a bunch of people that are like really excited and like they want to go surf and work out and like inspire you. It changes your mental, physical, emotional, structural, spiritual state just by being around them. I think that similarly, the way that food can be medicine, like a la Hippocrates, like people also are medicine in their own right. And sometimes a certain type of person is really supportive for you. Sometimes another type of person is really supportive for you. And I feel like there's kind of an inner, like a interesting, maybe sub-visible, like energetic type conversation that's manifesting Absolutely. With the consumption of food, comparable to, you know, hanging around a person that either brings you down or raises you up. Well, I'll get out of the metaphysical new age jargon.
No, I think this is great. Because this is a podcast and conversation I haven't had with anyone yet. And I love it because I got, you know, one of the things that happened to me, Aaron, as I was taking on the food industry, I went from just blogging for my own desire to share what I was learning to becoming a food activist and like being on center stage, taking on these giant conglomerates and knocking down their doors with hundreds of thousands of petitions, everyone from Kraft to getting them to remove artificial food dyes to Subway, getting them to change their entire bread and removing several harmful ingredients to Chick-fil-A to go in antibiotic free to Starbucks and Chipotle for releasing their ingredients for the first time in history and the entire beer industry. So like I did some crazy things.
It's really cool.
But at that same point, I used to write about some things like this and the scientific community would take it and try to make me look like I was pseudoscientific, that I was crazy. And they took one of the things that I talked about on my blog, which was the reason why I don't use microwaves. And I cited this book, and I'm sure you know it, by Dr. Emoto.
Yeah, right.
Where
Yellow Water.
Yeah, Messages in Living in Water. Messages in Water is the book. If anybody wants to check it out, but it's absolutely fascinating because he would take a glass of water and say loving things to it, and he would analyze the molecules under a microscope and see these beautiful water crystals. And then he would take this another glass of water and say hate things to it. And then he would see these crazy structures, like say the word Satan and other things to it. And it was like crazy what was happening to the water. Well, he did the same thing with microwave food. And if you see online, people are doing this with plants. And I think it's so cool. They'll have two of the same plant. And one plant, they'll say, like, I love you. You're amazing.
Sure.
And to the other plant, I hope you die. And it does die.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about this other realm of energy. And anyway, so they used this, by the way. My local newspaper had an article on me, the Charlotte Observer. It was a front page article because I had just gotten, I don't know, some big food company to change. And they and the food industry had had enough of me. They were like, we need to make this girl go away. We need to change, you know, we need to destroy her credibility. Yeah. And they did so much stuff. Like I'm talking paid reporters to go after me, paid quote unquote independent professors to go after me that worked for these universities. And then we found out through the Freedom of Information Request Act that they were actually getting paid by the chemical companies. And they would always show up in these articles. It was so crazy. Like one guy showed up in a New York Times profile piece about me. And his name was, I'll never forget his name because it's so crazy, Dr. Fergus Clydesdale. And I found out he was on the board of Sensient Technologies, the company that makes caramel coloring level 4 that's linked to cancer. And this is the caramel coloring that I helped inspire along with the amazing fan base and Food Babe Army out there who like shared all of this information, inspired Starbucks to remove caramel coloring out of their pumpkin spice latte. And, you know, this guy did not like me, right? He wanted to keep his caramel coloring board seat at Sensient Technologies. So like, you know, they're writing about me in the New York Times, but they're not releasing these conflicts of interest in these people that are my antagonist in these articles. It was just crazy. But anyways, going back to that Charlotte Observer story, they were looking for anything to take me down. And so they would like write about all my accolades and like all this cool stuff that I was doing. But then at the end of the article, they would mention like, oh, and she thinks that if you microwave crystals, they turn into Satan crystals and like, you know, all of this stuff. And I'm like, I don't think that. This is science experiments done by Dr. Emoto. He's dead now, unfortunately. I'm like, why don't you interview him? Yeah. You know, like I'm just quoting his work.
I think within that, it's really important. Something that I've gathered in paying attention to, even though, you know, despite all the new age kind of crystal jargon that I do tend to use on occasion, paying attention to nutrition and fitness and just like overall health, well-being, you know, and how to execute on that for professionally for about 20 years. And so I'm not saying that to be pompous. I'm just saying that for like a linear gauge of observation. And in that time, you know, I've seen a lot of things come and go and a lot of different fads and something that is, you know, it's like a flash in the pan. It's the most important thing for 12 months and then it's completely forgotten or we decide like that was actually really bad for you. And something that I think holds true across the board is just paying attention to sourcing of the food, if you're referring to food, but then also the source of information. And so a lot of the people that are the smartest people with the most accolades and the most scientific backing, and you know, they have that, you know, the white lab coat, all of that. If you actually look at the quality of their connective tissue, or you look at their eyes or their tongue, or you know, the tone of their voice, or just like the ease in which they express themselves in the world, sometimes it's okay, but sometimes it's not. And I would tend to trend towards the sourcing of information from actually like who's the bringer of that information, and are they actually living in a way that aligns with something that you would like to create for yourself? If it is, it would make sense to kind of at least like, you know, with a discerning ear, listen to them. But if not, I don't really care personally so much someone's perspective unless they're actually a living embodiment of a direction that I'd like to go. And so if you actually pull the hood up from the realm of many of the governing bodies that are governing like what's healthy for Americans, I personally, in observation of that, I'm like, I'm not overly impressed in taking fitness or training or nutritional advice from many of those folks. And so it's very confusing because they also, those individuals also have kind of space to have the most arrogance and kind of pride, because they're also simultaneously like the most respected. And so it's a really odd thing to be able to track as a consumer, I would think, if you don't have the confidence within yourself to have done enough research and kind of found like a healthy journey within yourself where you're like, oh, well, like I have enough momentum to trust myself. Right. And I feel like that's the thing that people, it's like they need to get to a point to have enough momentum to trust themselves. And then from there, branch out and have a discerning ear or eye on the type of information that they take.
And this is exactly why I wrote Feeding You Lies, which is all about the food industry's playbook. And they use those tactics of using experts to advance their agenda. You know, they go and they pay Harvard scientists to tell people that they don't exercise enough and that the sugary soda that they're drinking is not responsible for their obesity and their heart disease. And, you know, this is the kind of sneaky things that they're doing behind the scenes by trying to take the onus off of the food industry and more on the individual person. And so they do all of these things like create studies where, you know, the Candy Manufacturers Association had a study out, or that they paid for the study. They were the people who funded it behind the scenes. And the headline was that kids don't get fat who eat candy, right? And even though like that's totally absurd, right? It's a completely absurd notion to know that like if you eat candy, you don't get fat. However, what it does is it creates confusion in the mother's mind, the person that's like at the checkout and their kids, you know, being bombarded by all the candy at their eye level, and they're wanting to throw those Skittles into the grocery cart. And that mom maybe have seen that headline on CNN or in their newspaper or wherever and was like, you know, it's just, it's not so bad. You know, it's fine. You can just eat it. Right. Yeah. And it's to create that, like that confusion so that that mother just doesn't feel so bad about her choices. Sure. And so all of these kind of things are happening. And that's just one example of several examples I share in that book about how the food industry creates a conversation, a dialogue about what we should be eating when we really shouldn't be eating any of that stuff.
Yeah, right.
And it's really up to us to know how to eat. And I think it's very simple when you ask yourself three questions. You say, what are the ingredients of what I'm eating? You need to know every ingredient that you're eating. And if you don't know it, you need to go find out what that ingredient is. If you're eating a piece of bread and it has monodiglycerides in it, and you're like, what the crap is that?
Yep.
Find out what that is. Well, you know what it is? Well, the food industry invented it after trans fats were removed from our diets because it was linked to heart attacks and death. And so they needed to find a different way to preserve products that break down. It's a preservative and it has minute amounts of trans fat still in it. And it's like, oh, well, shit, do I want to eat that? You know?
Yeah.
And so you've got to ask yourself that every time. And then the second question you want to ask yourself is it nutritious? And you don't need to be a nutritionist or a registered dietitian to understand whether something's nutritious. You can use your own intuition to figure that out. Is it an apple or is it like a Snickers bar that's like processed and like sitting on that shelf for like, you know, 9 months, right? And then the third question is simple. Like, where do the ingredients come from?
Sure.
Right? Sourcing. Are they coming from, sourcing. Going back to your thoughts about sourcing, like you know, are they coming from a factory farm? Are they coming from a conventional farm that's, you know, being sprayed with Roundup? Are they coming from a factory? You know, and so if you just answer those three questions, every time you sit down to eat, you'll automatically start to make better choices because you won't like the answers. I'm positive that most people won't like the answers to those questions if they ask themselves, and they'll be like questioning, hey, what am I really eating here?
I want to take a moment and share something that has been invaluable to my own personal healthcare. That is getting my blood work done and checking my specific biomarkers with LifeForce. They're incredible because they have at-home phlebotomists. They come to you, which that's one of the biggest pain in the butts for me, is like going and getting my blood somewhere. I don't want to do that. And then shortly after that, you get your results back and you can see exactly what is happening with you in their very easy to use user interface. Then you set up a call. It's absolutely free, or it's a part of the membership, to speak with one of their functional medicine doctors. The gal that I talked to was incredible. I asked her every question I possibly could and she had amazing answers for everything. And then they offer you suggestions based off of your specific blood work, what is happening with you specifically, which is so important. I can't emphasize that enough. And they go over lifestyle suggestions, they go over nutritional suggestions, and then offer nutraceuticals as well as peptide therapy and hormone therapy if that is something that is supportive for you. That is all stuff that you can talk to with them to see if that would be something that would make sense for you. I would always go for the low-hanging fruit first, make sure that you are adjusting your lifestyle and your nutrition first. And then on top of that, there are some things that sometimes it can be very supportive to start to supplement in an exogenous way. So these guys are fantastic. I've had an amazing experience. Their membership is just, it's something that's been invaluable in my life just to remove all of the guesswork from my nutrition as well as some lifestyle choices, make sure my sleep is good, make sure everything that I'm putting into my body is on point. And they're also measuring for optimization, not just average baseline. So I love these guys. I think they're invaluable. I think you guys will dig them. And you can get $200 off of your membership by going to mylifeforce.com/align. That's mylifeforce.com/align. I implore anyone, get your blood work done, see what's happening with you, get a bird's eye view of your health, and then start moving from there. mylifeforce.com/align. You guys are going to dig them. I'm going to take a moment and share a word from our sponsor, Gentlemen Across the Nation. I have an urgent message for you. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped, the brand that took your balls to space, is now launching them to the ultra sphere. Introducing Manscaped 5th Generation Performance Package featuring the all new Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Yep, 5.0. With new cutting edge designs, a next generation skin safe blade, heads for different shaves. It's pretty much a spaceship to take your boys downstairs to the next level. Join the 9 million men worldwide who have trusted Manscaped with the new Performance Package 5.0 Ultra by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping just by using the code ALIGN. This is high tech for low places. Seriously though, I genuinely am a massive fan of Manscaped. I think the technology they use is fantastic. I think the whole user experience is hilarious every step of the way, and I would highly recommend these guys. So jump over to manscaped.com and use code ALIGN for 20% off your order as well as free shipping. Well, it seems like most of the things that will stick around and will maintain truth for a very long time are not very sexy, you know. And so that's the thing. It's like things that are backed by a lot of science and have a lot of data, and you know, there's a reason to fund research studies for those things. It's typically because it's developed by some company or corporation that's creating this product, and so they have millions of dollars to invest in promoting it and creating research and you know, perhaps paying people off as well. And it's like this whole dirty industry that you're getting involved in. Meanwhile, there is this other much less sexy realm that's like your local farmer's market. And yeah, there's nobody investing millions of dollars into it. There's nobody running a lot of research, right? Because there's just no money there. And that, I think, generally consistently across the board, it would, you know, behoove most biological organisms to stay in that space. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, where is technology valuable with the nutritional conversation? Because I think it'd be easy just to romanticize, and that could be in a general absolute way correct, just like stay with the regenerative farms and the farmer's market and stay close to the ground and local and all of that. I think that you could probably just live that way, and that would, you'd probably actually be quite good without any of this extended conversation. But where does science and technology actually benefit us from a nutritional perspective?
This is a great question. So I love this question because, you know, one of the things that I did as I became a mother is I realized that my drive to be an activist somehow got a little bit softened because I put myself in less risky situations. I mean, people were trying to take me down. I mean, driving by my house, rape threats, death threats, all kinds of stuff was happening to me before I kind of took a break from taking on the industry full on.
You're electing to enter into that kind of shadowy world.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you're not going to get that in the mom and pop local farm. Just like, yeah, eat more bananas. Yeah. Like, you're not going to get it. But if you go into that world, you're like, oh, this is the shadow. Like, this is what we're in. We're in it.
It's intense. And I mean, you know, you got to imagine what kind of money situation was happening when like a giant who is like the number one fast food at the time, Subway, had to completely re-engineer their bread without chemicals because of a petition that was started that, you know, had over 50,000 signatures and went worldwide viral.
Can you explain that? Because it's very interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hold on one second.
Yeah. The yoga mat air bubble bread situation.
So one of the things that I just found so disheartening when I started to investigate my food was these marketing messages that the fast food industry was using that were completely untrue. And one of those fast food giants was Subway. Subway was using the term eat fresh. Like every single time you would think of Subway, you were eating fresh. And when I looked at the ingredients in a Subway sandwich, I couldn't believe the chemicals that I found. I mean, the bread itself had close to 50 different ingredients, chemicals I couldn't pronounce. I didn't know what they were. I had to look up every single one of them and figure out what was going on there. One of the chemicals I found was azodicarbonamide. It's the same chemical they use in yoga mats and shoe rubber. So when you turn a yoga mat sideways and you see those evenly dispersed air bubbles, that is what azodicarbonamide does in a yoga mat, but it also does it in bread. So the bread becomes very uniform. Yeah. So they wanted their bread to look and taste the same across the board, after every chain, you know, in America. Well, I found out that they weren't using this chemical, azodicarbonamide, overseas. They were not using it in the Subway bread in Europe. They were not using the Subway bread in Singapore. And in Singapore, if you got caught using this chemical in your food, azodicarbonamide, you would get fined $450,000 and put in jail for 15 years.
Wow.
So I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What is this chemical exactly?
It's like a subtle form of assault.
Yeah, and it definitely is. And so what happens is when it's heated, it turns into semi-carbicide. So it actually turns into a carcinogen. But then also the factory workers that use this chemical have all sorts of lung issues. And that's why they've prohibited it overseas. Well, I'm like, okay, this is another example of how hypocritical our American food system is, that Subway has figured out how to make their bread safer and better for people overseas, but right. not here in the United States.
Yeah.
And so I said, this has got to stop. The first thing I did was write a huge investigation on this, called them, emailed them, asked them to change, asked them why they have it here and not elsewhere. They would not answer me, right? And so I was like, okay, something's got to give. Michelle Obama gets on TV, says, I have a partnership with Subway. Subway is good for all kids. We're going to start serving Subway in schools. I said, enough's enough. I've got to do something about this. And so I started a petition to get azodicarbonamide out of Subway bread. It went so viral that the Chinese, I just remember this, the Chinese government was freaking out because they thought they were using azodicarbonamide in China, but they weren't. And so there were the headlines were no azodicarbonamide in Chinese Subway. It was crazy. It was all over the globe. And Subway, by the end of that week, I got an email forwarded to me by someone who works at a Subway chain from the CEO of Subway that they were going to remove azodicarbonamide, which was so cool. But that campaign went so viral that azodicarbonamide went out of business altogether in every single bread manufacturer in America within months.
Wow.
So that chemical, you can only imagine how expensive it is for that company who made that chemical, right?
Yeah.
And all of the bread manufacturers had to suddenly figure out, oh, I've got to use something else to create the same look and feel of my product. And so the person, you know, who owns the azodicarbonamide chemical factory hates me, right? Like totally is after me. So like, what are they doing behind the scenes to like get at me, right? And so you can only imagine the amount of money that I was impacting in the food industry. So they were doing whatever they could to get me to just shut up and go away. I mean, they took over my Wikipedia page. They would hire groups of trolls to leave no comment left behind online. And the online space got so crazy and so bad, I had to turn off Google Alerts. I turned it off now over 8 years ago because I didn't want to know what was being said about me online because it was really starting to affect my work and my mental game, right?
Yeah.
And I decided to turn it off. And I just said, I don't care if someone's saying something nice about my work or negative about my work. It doesn't matter. I need to continue doing what I'm doing because it's so important, because I don't want people to feel like I used to feel dead and zombie-like.
I wonder why is it that we, you know, the people, the consumers of food in the United States and, you know, abroad, why do we need people like you? Like, is the FDA enough and the other governing bodies, or is it just all bought by lobbyists and is it all pretty much backed by financial bias? And if someone has $1 million to slip into somebody's pocket, or I don't know how those things work, but is it all kind of a little bit manipulated to sway towards the financial bias of whoever is the biggest dog with the most money and the most influence? Like, can we trust the FDA? What is the function of the FDA if we have
yoga mat
conditioner in right. in bread of one of the most popular sandwich chains in the United States? Like, what is the function of these organizations and these bodies?
Right. I mean, there's this underlying assumption that like everything we see at the grocery store has been like tested by the FDA and approved by some third party group that like has our best interest at heart. Well, the FDA is a very slim organization. It doesn't even have the capability to test the chemicals that are presented for being approved, basically. So the food companies themselves create the documents and the test results and the safety data that they then present to the FDA and the FDA rubber stamps it. So there's over 10,000 chemicals in our food supply, and over 3,000 of them have actually never been even reviewed by the FDA. So they're just like loosey-goosey in our food system, have no idea what's going on there. And I think about certain chemicals that are like, you can't believe they're even in the FDA log, like dimethyl polysiloxane. It's a chemical that's used in silly putty. It's also used in about every fry oil at every fast food chain in America. Mm. It's also used in the Diet Coke fountain drinks. So if you get a fountain drink, you're getting dimethyl polysiloxane. It's an ingredient you wouldn't find on a bottle of Diet Coke, but it's in the fountain drink. And this is an ingredient that if you look it up in the FDA website, it can be preserved with formaldehyde. Like there's formaldehyde in this chemical and it's in our food and all of our stuff, all the things that you're eating that's fried is being fried in this chemical. Wow. And in McDonald's, they use dimethyl polysiloxane here in America, but guess what they don't use in the UK? They don't use that chemical there. They know how to make their fries with just like three ingredients.
Why is the United States so dirty in that way? Like what, because you like the story that you'd like to have is the United States is the best.
Yeah.
You know, we have the best nutrition. We have the best doctors. We have the best technology. We have the best movies. Why is it so easy to feed what seems to be carcinogenic slash other things poison to people? Why can we get away with that as a company in the United States so well, whereas someone in France is not able to? Like, what's going on with the French paradox? Like, why isn't the United States, why are we slacking in this way?
Yeah, well, they use the precautionary principle in Europe that they actually have to prove something to be safe before they add it to the food supply. Here, they don't have that at all. And
is it because we're too big?
Well, no, it's because the industry is running the government. So if I were to think of like the industry just wants to make money, right? They're going to do whatever they can to make money, right? The reason why Kraft used artificial food dyes here in America and not in Europe is because they want to avoid a warning label in Europe that says may cause adverse effects on activity and attention in children. They didn't want that warning label on their products. So they figured out how to use paprika and beta carotene in their mac and cheese. But here in the United States, they're using yellow 5 and yellow 6 because they could get away with it. And it was less expensive for them to use that because it's a petroleum-based dye. It doesn't break down like real food in a product. And their shelf life can be that much longer. Hmm. And so they were using that to their advantage, because they have lobbyists in Washington and other people that make sure this happens. A perfect example of how corrupt it is red number 3. Hmm. Red number 3 was found to cause cancer in lab animals. And so they banned it in cosmetics. And right before the bill was signed, the alcohol industry lobbied the FDA to keep red 3 in food. Do you know why? Because of the maraschino cherries that were popular at the time on Shirley Temples and other drinks at the bars. Hmm. So red 3 is allowed to be in all of our food, but we can't have it in our lipstick. And so just now, actually today, California banned red 3, which was so cool. So hopefully red 3 will, because California is such a huge consumer base, that hopefully red 3 will bite the dust altogether. But that's a perfect example of how corrupt it is. But hey, I want to go back to the reason I started the Subway story. Was because of all of the crazy criticism I was getting and the onslaught of all the trolls and everything, and why I had to, like, you asked me what company, like what technology, this is the original question.
Yeah, where's
what technology is actually good, right?
It's a still man argument for technology and food.
Right. Yeah. So there is some technology that's great. And one of the things that I've learned over creating Truvani, which is the company that I created after realizing that I wanted to continue to change the food industry, but change it within, because from without felt like too much resistance and raising children. I still am such an activist at heart. And as my kids get older and older, that the fight keeps getting back and bigger in me. And I just, there's a couple of things that I really want to take on once my little one hits school age. Yeah. And, but you know, one of the reasons I started Truvani is because I wanted to change the supplement industry from within, because there's all kinds of crazy chemicals in protein powders, and the FDA doesn't even regulate at all supplements, right? So there's like, it's a wild, wild west out there. Sure. There's no third party testing. There's tons of heavy metals and stuff, all sorts of chemicals that's happening. And there's no like supply chain regulation either. And so I wanted to create this company. And one of the things that I learned is like, okay, now I'm, now I'm a processed food company, right? Like in a way, right? Because I'm making a protein powder that's a process, like just to be honest, it's a processed product, right?
I mean, processing can mean so many things. Processing could be skinning an animal is processing. Yeah, so like, exactly. Like that's another thing. So like there's certain buzzwords or like process and it's like, bam, yeah. It's like, no, wait, hold on. There's nuance to everything.
Yeah,
so like, what do we actually mean when we say process and right. When does it and become that is a better question.
So yeah. So when I think about the technology that's used for food production, there's a lot of good technology out there. I think about our bar manufacturer who makes our bar with ingredients that you would find in your kitchen without adding any preservatives. Like, I think it's amazing how we can use dates and maple syrup as opposed to like these other additives like, yeah. You know, brown rice syrup or tapioca starch or these other things that other bar manufacturers are using in their bars to create that binding effect because they last longer on the shelf. And so I think about those technologies we're using at Truvani, but then I also think about other companies that are using like cold press technology. Like companies like Once Upon a Farm, who are making pouches for little kids that have like more nutrition in them and more fruits and vegetables, or a company like Hope Hummus, who has, you know, is using a cold pressure pasteurization. If you see guacamole at Costco, you'll look at the ingredients. It's already pre-made guacamole. And there's no preservatives in it. And it's like, how are they doing this? This is amazing, right? It's all organic, like amazing. And it's because they're cold, you know, pressed, right? It's cold, cold pasteurization. So, or using HPP technology is what it's called, right? High pressure pasteurization is the long term for that. So those technologies I think are amazing because they're bringing the realest type of ingredients but in a mass produced scale, already made very convenient for people who are leading very busy lives, and they're creating, you know, products that are way better for you than the other things that have been on the shelf for so long. So I love that. And this is actually one of the things that I share in my book, Food Babe Family, that's just out now. And I have this list of 100 better snacks than Goldfish. Like Goldfish are one of those things that like, I would never buy in my house. Like you'll never find a pack of Goldfish ever in my house unless like someone gives it to one of my kids behind the scenes and I don't know about it or something, right? Yeah. We just never find it. And or an in-law brings it in or, you know, some perpetrator will bring it into the house, right? And so Goldfish are like those things that I just find so representative of the American diet. It's
sure.
White, nutritionless wheat flour that's been, you know, completely devoid of all of its minerals and nutrition. Then it's doused with MSG-like additives, autolyzed yeast extract, you know, and flavoring so that people create that kind of hook in your brain.
Branded with the face of a smile.
Yes, and a fish that makes it fun.
Yeah, so it's like a cute, sweet little thing. And same thing with McDonald's. Same thing with like, and that's the thing is like organic foods, you know, or regenerative farms don't really have the best PR teams because again, it's just there's not that much money in it. It's long, it's slow, it's arduous, and so it's just a freaking misshaped apple. You know, because it's not sprayed in pesticides and, you know, genetically modified and, you know, which I think most apples at this point, they've been, you know, spliced together enough times that it's all pretty much, which that'd be kind of an interesting thing to talk about as well, do you have to be out of here pretty soon, by the way?
I can go a little longer, okay, maybe like 2:20.
Cool. Okay, cool. Because I'd love to talk specifically about the book, the latest okay, book.
Awesome.
And then also a few kind of like, I resent the term rapid fire questions. So they're not that, but specific okay. questions. But yeah, that's like less conversational.
It's
kind of like there's a book called Whatever You Think the Opposite. And I think you see a lot of a similar thing of like what you see with camouflaging in nature, where certain snakes, for example, that look to be very poisonous are not that poisonous. And certain snakes that look to be benign, you know, are because there's no reason for them to actually have to package themselves in something else. And I think we see like we're human beings are an expression of nature, and we kind of see some of those similar effects in the food industry, where something that's like, if it's a clown and it's a big smile, it's like, I think there's something going on there. You know, whereas if it's just kind of a misshaped apple or pear that doesn't look quite perfect, it's like that might actually be the most nutrient dense food.
Yeah.
It's very paradoxical and very confusing. And it takes a lot of, I think, like I mentioned before, like intuition and confidence, you know, and trust in self to be able to actually go against what we're being bombarded with, you know, X amount of thousands of times a day in the form of advertising. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's not a question. And I apologize for monologuing so much. But yeah.
No, it's great. Because I think about companies like, so one of the things that, like, I have kids, right? And so, like, I wish when I went, would go down like the Halloween aisle, right? That I would see like a ton of fun for you products in the better for you brands. And they're starting to happen. There's a lot out there, but there needs to be so much more. Mm-hmm. And I just found this brand. I think it's amazing. It's called Sweet Nothings, and they're frozen smoothie pops. And they're using things like chia and dates and spinach and pineapple to make like a green version, right? And then for like a mango version, they're using mango and carrots and chia and dates. And then for the red version, they're using beets and strawberries. So they're like combining fruits and vegetables. So it's not just like a big sugar bomb. And then, you know, they're using natural forms of sugar in the dates to create that sweet flavor. And they're putting it in a little container that looks fun, and they put a little smiley face on the character and like the whole thing. And I'm like, yes, this is what we need. It's like fun things that are good for you and organic and have like all of the good nutrients in them, and that you can buy and have in a package and readily available for moms. Right. Yeah. And I think about the biggest struggles that we're going to have as a society. And if we don't start teaching our kids the truth about food in a very serious manner, we're just going to continue all of this situation that we're living in right now. Yeah. And I believe that we have this amazing opportunity that we've never had before, because we have all of this information at our fingertips. Like, I think people are learning more about food and nutrition than they ever have in their entire life. I know my parents didn't have access to this kind of information before, right? And now we do. And so if you learn this information, if you're listening to this podcast, you go and you read my new book, Food Babe Family. I feel like it's an obligation to teach your kids the truth about food and teach them about ingredients. Start having them read ingredients. Talk about the ingredients in your food and the things that you're buying. Take them to the grocery store. Explain to them why you won't buy a certain product because of the ingredients. Yeah. And I've been doing that since day one with my child. Both my children, actually. And it's been a tremendous experience to watch where their level of thinking goes when they're making a decision on their own, whether at school or at a birthday party or some other situation where we're inundated with all of the processed stuff out there.
Yeah.
That is really bad for our health.
Could you, so quote unquote, rapid fire, non-rapid fire, because I don't like the concept, sounds too cheesy, but just kind of elevator pitch responses. If we only had a moment for you to explain some stuff, what are your thoughts on the conversation around vegetable oils and seed oils and oils in general? What do we need to know? What's important?
Okay.
What should we be using? What shouldn't we be using?
So avoid corn, soy, canola, and cottonseed. All four of those have been genetically engineered. They have been extracted with hexane. That carcinogen I talked about earlier, they're high in omega-6 fatty acids. They're high in linoleic acid, which turns on cancer cells. Avoid all of those. Cottonseed especially. Cottonseed is actually a textile, so it has even more worse pesticides in it. Mm. Then what you want to do instead is do coconut oil, olive oil, ghee, grass-fed butter. Those should be your mainstays at the house. Maybe some avocado oil too.
What about beef tallow?
Oh, I love beef tallow. Yeah. Any kind of lard, that's great.
Yeah.
Any kind of natural substance for fat is fantastic. Any kind of man-made, you know, extracted with hexane, it's been bleached, it's been deodorized. It's gone through so many chemical processes to the point where it's literally, there's no nutrition left in it. All it does is degrade your cells.
Seems like paying attention to sourcing. It's kind of like if you don't know anything about nutrition, just maybe like Google the origin of the factory of where this thing came from, or like the process that it went through. And if it looks appetizing, it's probably reasonably good for you. And if it looks disgusting, like, it's probably not.
I was in Switzerland recently, and I ordered room service, and these fries came, and I'm like, I guess they just added it to our order. We didn't order them, but like, I love fries, like whatever. And I had one, and I was like, this is the best fry I have ever had. I was like, this is so good. I could not stop eating them.
Yeah.
And when we went to the restaurant downstairs, it was like the day we got there. So we eventually went to the restaurant downstairs and ate at the restaurant. It was duck fat French fries.
Oh,
they were
so
fried
good.
In duck fat. So and I was good. Like, duck fat's so good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you can eat the like, that's something that I've had a transition, which who knows, maybe I'll find out in 10 years I'm making a terrible mistake, but I don't fear fat, lard, butter, eating like the fatty parts of the steak or whatever. Like there's things that I think originate from a quote unquote, like genuinely natural source that taste really good. I just intuitively, there's something within me that's like, why do my human genetics and my human taste buds find this to be so delicious and flavorful? And why is everything that I'm hearing on the internet or, you know, wherever the echo chambers that I'm exposed to saying that this thing that feels and tastes so good is so bad for me? You know, and so that's something that I've crossed over to the other side where I'm like, oh yeah, like duck fat French fries is totally legit. It's okay.
Yeah, it's so good.
We can do it. And then maybe some ketchup from like Sisson or something of the sort.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Definitely Primal Kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah. What would be the, if you had to eat at a fast food restaurant, what is the best fast food restaurant from your perspective?
It is I'm gonna say two answers. Number one, just find a grocery store versus a fast food restaurant. There's as many grocery stores around than fast food, right?
Wrong answer.
Wrong answer. Okay. So if it has to be a fast food, probably Chipotle.
I would eat Chipotle.
Yeah.
I like Chipotle.
I would eat Chipotle. You know, Chipotle's come a long way. They used to use GMOs. They're one of the first fast food chains that removed all GMOs. And they're using a lot of you know, better for you ingredients. They don't use antibiotics in the production of their meats, hormones, that kind of thing. So like, I think that's great. You know, again, when you eat fast food, you're subjecting yourself to a lot of unknown chemicals though. So let's just talk about that. You know, the rice is coming pre-made in a plastic bag where they're parboiling it, you know, in a plastic bag. So you don't like think about like the plastics that's getting into your food. The type of materials that Chipotle is using is probably better, like the type of bowls and other things that they're using. But like the things that they're wrapping your burrito up in, a lot of it has PFAS and other forever chemicals that are in there that are disrupting our endocrine system and causing cancer. So like the least you can eat out, the better.
Yeah.
And there's been so many points in time now that I have kids that I'm like, oh, just wouldn't it be easier just to go to Chipotle and then to like make them something real quick for the road or for an airplane trip or for, you know, whatever. And it would be, and sometimes it is, and sometimes I do that. But if I'm given the choice and I have the time, I will make something instead. And so I have this amazing recipe actually in Food Babe Family, my new cookbook called the Fast Food Burrito, that you can make a load of them and freeze them and have them ready to go whenever you have a situation where you need something like that. So
I love that. What would be, if you were in a restaurant, what are the suggestions one could make to a waiter or waitress that would be advantageous enough for your health to risk being annoying?
So it's funny. I love this question, but I was thinking the other day about, so I was on this boat a while back at, it was at Summit at Sea.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So yeah. It was super fun. And we were all sitting having hibachi, right? Mm-hmm. And they were going to use whatever crazy oil that they were using to cook everything in. But they were starting with like beautiful ingredients, zucchini and onions and broccoli and carrots and like all this stuff, right? And like shrimp and like whatever, right? Sure, it's probably like some kind of farm shrimp from some awful farm, whatever. You know, there's a lot of problems, right? I can see within the sourcing of those ingredients. But they have this huge thing of butter sitting there. You know, the I don't know if you've been to Hibachi Grill lately, but they have this huge block of butter that they use to like put on the fried rice and like whatever, where they add it to like the oil too. So like, I just asked like, hey, can you just not use the oil and just use the butter?
Sure.
And I'm telling you, it was fantastic. So yeah, like you can make those kind of substitutions. Of course, it's different when the chef's not right in front of you. So like you can ask your server, you can say, hey, could I have my stuff prepared with olive oil versus whatever other oil you're using? Or you can tell them, you know, I would like to have the dressing on the side, use a little lemon on your salad instead. Because a lot of the dressings, I would say, at almost every restaurant, I feel like has soybean oil in it.
Yeah.
So you can make those kind of substitutions. And then you can kind of like order what I say, like off the menu, right? It's not on the menu, but off the menu, kind of see what they have and kind of make some meal up, you know, based on the ingredients you kind of see in different dishes if there's something that isn't right. And a lot of times, you know, I'll order the seafood dish versus the meat dish when I'm out if I don't know the sourcing of the ingredients.
Yeah. And then you still have the issue with heavy metals in seafood, but you know, it's kind of like damned you do, damned you don't. It's like come back to sourcing with everything.
I feel like the omega-3s and like the other things that are good in fatty fish, like probably outweigh that. So
I don't know. Okay. But last couple few questions. What would you say is the worst of the worst as far as restaurants? This is probably, you probably don't like answering this question, but is there anyone that you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe that that exists? It's okay if you're just like, I don't know.
I mean,
I can understand you not wanting to.
Fast food chain, like all of them.
They all kind of generally suck in their own way. Yeah,
they do. They really do.
Asking that,
I want to just mention this. Like Domino's is like a $4.5 billion company.
Yeah.
And they are like integrated in schools.
Yeah.
In their lunch program. Yeah. And this really irritates me because they're using a chemical called TBHQ in their phase oil. And so they're using this phase oil to like spray the pans before they put their pizza dough down and spray the top of their pizza when it's done. And this ingredient, TBHQ, like completely wrecks people's immune system. Sure. This is something that you do not want to eat. It's also in Reese's peanut butter cups. And so like, I think about these type of chemicals that are in like a pizza that like so many people order and then so many kids are eating at school. That's the kind of stuff that I really hate. And then, you know, every single fast food chain has just a ton of chemicals in it because it's meant to be made, like they're mass producing these burgers and fries and bread, and they're mass producing in such a way that it can be frozen. And so then it can be made and it's supposed to like preserve for such a long time. And that's how they make money because the food never goes bad. So they don't have any food waste.
Yep.
And you got to think about that. And so it's like, if you're supporting a situation like that, you're going to get the worst of the worst sourcing and the worst of the worst ingredients.
And all this stuff eventually circles back into becoming a part of your environment and part of your riverways and a part of the soil and a part of, like, it's not just something you're getting away with and saving a quarter in this moment. It's something that ultimately seeps into the entirety of your life in broader ways than you could even imagine now. But you probably notice the effect maybe in 10 years or 5 years or 2 years, which is another thing. All right. You need to go. If you have a one word response for this, I'd be curious if there's some chemical preservative, something, some nefarious food like substance circulating in our food system right now that you think will be banned, outlawed, or you will be having some type of taking some stand on in the next 1 to 3 years. Is there something you see in the pipeline of like, I can't believe this is in our food?
I still feel this way about artificial food dyes. And I'll tell you why. A company like Kellogg's is already making their cereals overseas without artificial dyes. So they already make Fruit Loops without artificial dyes overseas.
Yeah.
They even made the commitment after I started a petition in 2015 to remove artificial food dyes by 2018. Well, what date is it today? It's 2023. They haven't done jack shit.
Right.
And they don't do it because no one's policing them. Well, Kellogg's, if you're listening to this, it's time to wake up. Bonnie's son is going to school in January, yep. and I'll be coming to your headquarters, good. Okay, with an army of people looking
that.
For this change. And
that.
So, like, you know, if the FDA isn't going to do it, you know, yeah. I got to do it. Who else is going to do it? Who's going back to all of those newspaper articles that, like, gave Kellogg's all this credit for announcing the removal of these chemicals and holding them accountable and asking them, like, hey, what's up? Why didn't you do this?
Yeah.
Right? Nobody's doing that work. Where are the journalists? Where are the people? Right? And it's like, it's up to me and other people that care about this stuff. And that's why I love my community, because they not only care about what they're eating, they care enough to go out there and call the companies, petition the companies, and hold them accountable. It's so yeah. awesome.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. For people that are in a place like many, I'm sure, are myself in various different ways, and a place of just like almost throwing your hands up of like, it's just too complicated and too complex, and how the heck do we navigate this? I'm very grateful that you have the most recent book, Food Babe Family, which breaks down and delineates and kind of opens up a clear path for folks to be able to follow through this, and also provides recipes and guidance and all the things. Is there anything else that would be supportive for folks to know about if they want to go deeper into your work?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely check out Food Babe Family. In there, I have a whole guidebook on how I raise my kids, an intimate look into exactly how I run my household and how we eat in courses, and like what I serve first and like why, and all of the cool. things, and 100 new recipes. But also, if you come to foodbabe.com, you can learn about my other books. I think Feeding You Lies is probably my favorite book. It's hard to say that as this one's releasing, but it's like, it just gives you the background, the playbook on what's happening, so that you can look deeper and understand what's really happening when you read a headline or you see sure. somebody trying to sell you something. And so you can make a better decision and use your critical thinking to figure out what's really true and what's not.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, a book that has recipes compared to a book that's like a book. They're like two different.
Totally different. Like, one's the know-how about how to navigate this world.
Yep.
And then one's the practical information on how to implement it. So, yeah.
So my feeling is, if me as a writer, the thing that I would like the most is one that I could expand the ideas and really like investigate and go in. And yeah. then I feel like a cookbook, you do all that as well, but it's also much more utilitarian of like, here's what you actually do. So, well, thank you so much. I appreciate you. You also are big time on the Instagram.
The
food
yes.
babe over
you
there.
Can come to the food babe.
Yeah.
Yes, on Instagram.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you. As you already know, you're an incredibly important person in this world. So I really appreciate you taking the time with me and us. And I look forward to getting to do this in person.
Yeah, that would be so awesome.
One of these days. All right. Yeah. That's all. Thank you all for tuning in, and I will see you next week. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. If you did, you can tag myself over to Line Podcast on Instagram. You also tag Food Babe, any parts that you like. I enjoy resharing those guys. It's great to see what you guys actually enjoy in the conversations. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for doing you. Thanks for checking out the YouTube channel as well, where you can see the entire video of this and many other conversations. That is it. That is all. Appreciate you. I'll see you next week.